I'm Steve Potter, and welcome to Cityscape. The St. Louis Fringe Festival is back later this month for its second season. 30 performances in 5 venues over 5 days, and will feature everything from comedy, dance, poetry, to burlesque. We're going to talk it over with the festival's Emily Pirro and with performing artists Blair Hamilton and Ed Reggie, who's directing one of the offerings. And Scott Andrews and Nina Ferrigno will preview this year's Missouri Chamber Music Festival, featuring world-renowned musicians celebrating the music of Stravinsky and Schubert. Well, it's a new season for the Muni, entertaining audiences under the stars in Forest Park for 95 years now. Executive producer Mike Isaacson is looking forward to his second season there, and he's here now for some reflection and some projection, perhaps, Mike, maybe.
Reflection.
I mean, you look back. You've been there. Congratulations, one under your belt. You must be excited, though. Seriously.
You know, it was a. I was very happy with last summer, and I was happy because the audience was happy. We put a lot of new ideas and new ways of doing the shows on stage, and they really responded with great joy and great. Really gave it to us. So it was really exciting to be a part of that.
Well, how new was that experience for you? I mean, you've been in the business a long time with, say, Fox Theatricals and things you've done here and on Broadway, but the Muni is a different place.
It's very different. And actually, if there was one thing that surprised me about last summer is that, I had been there the summer prior to that observing, but sort of sitting in the metaphorical and often physical hot seat. When a show was really great, and the audience tells you when it's great, but when there were those moments when there were 10,000 people and they were excited or alive or engaged in that way that's only at the Muni, something different happens that is not in any other theater, I would argue, in the world. I've been in most of them. And there is, because of the history, because of the Muni being partly a civic idea that we all gather in the summer to be a part of this, that when we really hit it, there's an extra level of passion, of commitment, of pride. And to get to play with that is really, really something. I mean, everybody feels it. Everybody feels an on and off stage. And yeah. It's special.
Is there, because you don't want to mess it up.
Well, thank you. No, I don't. Was that a question? But no. You're right. There is a weight to that. There is a legacy. There is something that where you're right. That's the 2 a.m. Like, oh, or, you know, are we getting this right? But you know, look at it. I work with these amazingly talented people, and everybody feels that. Everybody takes on that responsibility, because it is an extraordinary institution. So we all feel it.
Well, you talk about the excitement, you talk about the history, and I think that's part of it too, because you really do feel it. You feel 95 years. You feel, you sort of feel the presence of those performers in a way. And also, don't you think, just the sheer size of the audience adds a little adrenaline?
There's that, but there's also a sense of scope of, you know, look at it. It's the most democratic theater in this country. When you look at who's sitting in the boxes and you go tier by tier to, you know, 1,200 free seats a night, that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. So there is a sense of participation. One of my favorite images of last year, when I could sort of really get my head around it, at The King and I, which was our last show, you know, so we had this classic and I was very proud of the production. And I look over one night and there's this couple in their early 70s and they're holding hands and staring at the stage. And just you just could see the bliss on their face. And next to them was a couple in their 20s with the tattoos and the piercings, staring at the stage with the same bliss. And you go, wow. And that is just the glory of the Muni.
You're not going to see that everywhere.
No, you're not. You're really not. And you're right. That's a treasure, and it has to be taken care of. And you know, one of my real interests in joining this incredible place was, you know, we're 95 now, we're crossing over to 100. How do we make sure we're here for the next century? Because this is important.
You've got to be talking about what you're going to do in 5 years, right?
Yeah, we're just beginning those preliminary conversations and sort of, you know, how do we engage everybody and how do we talk about and what we do. But yeah, it's going to be an incredible, important landmark.
Well, while we're talking about last season, your first season there, and you mentioned a few things that came to mind, Wow. Last season, like the hottest ever?
Oh, temperature-wise, yes. Yeah. Yes, yes. Welcome to the Muni. The hot. My favorite was, it was always phrased as the hottest summer in recorded history. You know, like they were sort of acknowledging, well, somewhere before '88, it might have been hotter. But yeah, it was hot. And actually the real sort of compliment that was paid to the work was we actually matched the attendance of the year before in that heat. So that we all were very, very proud of that.
We had the privilege of talking to Jennifer Holliday last year when she was here for Dream Girls. Would that have been about the hottest part of the summer right there?
Oh, it's all a heat blur.
Yeah.
You know, Dream Girls was hot, Joseph. It was all pretty hot.
I hear she's, you know, when she was here last year doing Dream Girls, when she was on this program, she said she thought it might be the last time she did the role. Yeah. But she's doing it again or about to, right?
She's doing it in Atlanta. And it was funny because she called me because she... you know, she had been making those statements. We never made them. She did. And she called me, said, look, I have this opportunity. And actually what happened with that production with her was it gave her a sense of confidence that she really needed as a person, a performer. She hadn't done it in such a long time. And the way the audience greeted her and that experience, it really as a person gave her something to move on to. So I was like, please go take this extraordinary performance and share it with everybody you can.
And did she hang around in town for a while after the show?
She did. She fell in love with St. Louis. She was here for like a week or 10 days. I mean, I sort of lost track of her and people were like, oh, I had dinner with Jennifer last night, you know? So it was great. It was really lovely.
Yeah. Any other since last year was your first season? Anything come to mind, highlights for you personally?
Well, you know, there was this trajectory that we did. I did have an agenda where artistically, as we started with a very traditional, old-fashioned musical, and as we went on, we sort of kept breaking the fourth wall and inviting the audience to the dance and coming up with ideas that really engage the fact that there's 10,000 of us there. And what was really exciting about that was the audience loved it and really came to dance and came to play, and there was that. And so, you know, we're sort of beginning with that energy this year with this season because we're opening with Spamalot, which is anarchy, and it's a comedy, and it's constantly playing with the audience and what its idea is. So we're sort of starting there and heading out from kind of where we left off. But, you know, I said to the Spamalot company at the sort of opening remarks of, you haven't felt the power till you're hearing 10,000 people laugh at you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is just great.
You know, we talked about how hot it was last year. Something sort of exciting this year that you've got.
Yeah,
and you're going to be cooling it off a bit.
Yeah, it's really, really exciting. And I really have to tip the hat to Denny Reagan and Clark Davis, the chair of the board, and Lucy Springmeier, head of our development, because we have, from idea to conception, this speaks to really how people support the Muni, we have installed 4 new fans that are state-of-the-art technology, that are absolutely silent, that can run through the show.
Now, people have been there, know they would turn fans on during intermission
right.
And before the show.
Right.
So this is new.
Yeah, it's brand new, and it's never been done in this sort of setting. So they found a technology and said, what if, you know, let's play with it, and everybody got on board with this. And we spent months doing sound testing, and we went out and raised money from the community. It was started with a sort of a grant and an initial gift from Sally and Harry Johnston and their family foundation, which was unbelievable. And, you know, what's really important for the Muni, too, is that, you know, you always have the past as you sit there. It just is the history. But we also, by what we put on the stage and what sort of surrounds us, you've got to look to the future. It matters. So here's this cutting-edge technology that's never been used anywhere in the world, and we're very excited by it.
Have you figured, well, that could take 10 degrees off, couldn't it?
We are underplaying it, but we're very happy with all our initial tests.
Cool.
You know, so come on out, everybody, and try it. You know, if the weather's like this, we may not have to turn them on, but you know,
yeah, well,
something tells me we'll need to.
It's not going to last.
Oh, Steve.
I'll try to be positive, though. Okay, so the fans are a first. There's also another first at the Muni this year, which involves, I guess it's your, where down on the list is it? Mary Poppins, I guess, second to last show that you've got.
Yeah.
There's going to be a first in that show.
It is a first in show. This is the first time in the history of the Muni, we're going to fly somebody over the audience.
Watch out for those fans.
Right. Hey, Mary, hang a left. This is another one we've spent, you know, as soon as we knew we were doing the show, which was basically last August, we went into studies and engineering and designers and everybody figuring out how to get that right. And again, you know, it's exciting to do it, but you have to go, why would you do this? Because it's a lot of work. And particularly for something like Poppins, where you're going to have 3,000 kids a night who have never been to the theater in their life before, you've got to find that active imagination where they just can't believe what they're saying. Right. Because it's at the Muni, they'll remember it for the rest of their lives.
Right.
I was at a funeral of a very dear friend, a guy in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He'd grown up in St. Louis, and he was a Broadway producer and blah, 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 and a really dear colleague. And his brother gave the eulogy. And it was right in the middle when we were trying to figure this out. It didn't look like we were able to do it. And I was sort of like, oh, how far do I push this? And sort of, and this is a very true story. He, his brother began talking about how Larry, when Larry saw Peter Pan at the Muni from the free seats, is when he decided he had to have a life in the theater.
Hmm.
And I thought, okay, we got to figure this out. And Tracy Utzmeyers, who's our production supervisor, who's unbelievable, you know, just we didn't give up on it. And Denny was unbelievably supportive of the idea. So it's going to be exciting.
We're talking with Mike Isaacson, the executive producer of the Muni. Let's run down your season really quickly. You began with Spamalot, which opens June 17th, and you began rehearsals. What was it, last
yesterday.
Night?
Yesterday was the first day of rehearsals.
Yeah.
It's great. It stars John O'Hurley, so people who watch Seinfeld and Dancing with the Stars, he's incredible King Arthur. Dennis Jones, who directed and choreographed our incredible production of Chicago, is doing Spamalot. And, you know, I'll tell you the fringe benefit of this job is to walk into a rehearsal room on its first day and see moments that have been created first, like for our stage, and just be blown away by it. So I'm really, really inspired by our opening.
Then near the end of June, it's Shrek the Musical.
Yes. You know, Shrek is fascinating because if you even go back to the William Steig book, this was looking at the idea of fairy tales and switching around our expectations. It's got a beautiful score by Jeanine Tesori and John Tartaglia, who really rocked our production of Aladdin last year, played the genie. Well, John was on Broadway's cast of Avenue Q. He's a puppeteer. He's actually a puppeteer on Sesame Street. He's been doing it 16. And he was in the Broadway production of Shrek. He's going to direct this production, and we've come up with a whole puppeting costume concept that's real exciting.
July 1st, Nonsense Muni Style. What's
Here
that?
We go.
What is that?
Well, this is the 30th anniversary of the creation of the original Nonsense, and I reached out to the creator's guy named Dan Goggin. And I said, look, could we find a version for that works for the Muni on our stage and sort of Muniize it and make it a local flavor? So the Nonsense basic line is the Little Sisters of Hoboken are coming to the Muni to do their benefit because they need to raise money for the Dear Sisters who unfortunately ate some bad vichyssoise and we need to raise the money to bury them. Right. The goal is to have the audience laughing their heads off, and this is very funny, and also 40 tap dancing nuns, which I believe we've accomplished in the show. So that's an evening's entertainment. And Phyllis Smith from NBC's The Office, St. Louis gal, is in the production joining us as Sister Julia Child of God. She's the one who made the vichyssoise and is going to take us all in a cooking lesson. So it's going to be very nun mayhem funny.
Putting that one on my list for sure. July 8th, you open South Pacific.
South Pacific. Here's a classic, and I'm very excited for those people who saw our production of King and I last year, which was very well received. It's the same creative team, same director, designers. And then Laura Michelle Kelly, who is our stunning Miss Anna, is returning to play Nellie in South Pacific.
Les Mis, July 15th, opens.
Les Miserables is in its full, you know, knee Les Miserables. And this is really exciting because the film came out and there was this outcry from the Les Mis community. People would spend years of their lives on the turntable because the film, while it succeeded as sort of this action-adventure film set to music, was not really the musical. And that score is glorious. So we have put together a company with our full Muni orchestra, and we're just going to sing it like you've never heard it before.
Mary Poppins, a musical, July 25th. And on August 5th, the final show of the season, West Side Story.
Yeah, just ending with one of the greats, all-time greats.
Well, I want to mention one thing here. I have in my hands a copy of something that we retrieved off your Facebook page.
Ruh-roh.
And I want to congratulate you because you have been nominated. This was dated April 30th of this year. You've been nominated for the American Theater Wing's Antoinette Perry Tony Award.
Yes.
Right, for Bringing On the Musical.
Bringing On the Musical.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
This isn't your first time at the rodeo either.
Not first time, but you know, every time you're invited to the dance, you just go with a big flask and a lot of gratitude, and it's really...
A big flask?
Well, you know, it is the prom. It's the Broadway prom. But that was a surprise and an honor, and I loved working on that show, and everyone worked really hard, so the fact that the nominators remembered us, because we were a limited engagement in New York. We closed in January, right. And usually it's sort of out of sight, out of mind, so the fact that we got that honor was really great.
And the awards are Sunday, are they?
Sunday. I'll be flying up tomorrow.
Well, I'll be thinking of you. Have a wonderful time with
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Also, I want to let people know, too, that you and I had a little interview at STL TV where we kind of recap there's a montage from last season, a picture of those fans, by the way, that we were talking about. And if people would like to see that, and all the fun you made of me during that show.
Just a little bit.
If you go to YouTube and search Muni 2013 season City Corner, not Cityscape, Muni 2013 season City Corner, you'll be able to see Mike talk about the Muni and his history there and all the rest of that. One final thing, Mike, in closing, I know something's really important to you. You alluded to it earlier about the civic importance of the Muni and what it means to this community and how important the support is here.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at, it was funny, I was at the launch for the St. Louis 250 thing, and they talked about the 150 celebration, which actually was the beginning of the Muni. And the very idea of that was to bring everyone together, experience something together, and we'll be a better city. And that remains in sort of the soil of the Muni. It is a community civic idea. And I just find it amazing that we've kept that for 95 years, celebrated it, and no other city has this. I mean, literally, people are surprised I'm surprised at how much people locally don't know. Like, everything's created here. Our designers, our musicians, people, everything is done for this, not like anyplace else in the world, literally. And this sort of event that happens every summer, it's an extraordinary thing.
And the new Muni season opens a week from Monday. If you'd like more information, go to stlpublicradio.org, the Cityscape page, and we'll have a link to the Muni's website. Mike Isaacson is the Muni's executive producer. We wish you continued success.
Thank you.
Everybody break a leg. Good luck at the Tonys.
Thank you.
And we'll see you down the road.
See you down the road.
Mike Isaacson. Coming up next, this year's Missouri Chamber Music Festival, and later the St. Louis Fringe Festival. This is St. Louis Public Radio.